Christopher Springman, and you're listening to a Backstory MD feature on body language. Do you ever wonder who really makes the final decisions about your diagnosis and treatment? Your doctor, right? Well, yeah, maybe. But your physician often has an unseen partner sitting thousands of miles away in front of a computer screen. A partner who questions the doctor's determinations about your health, all based on cost control. That's right. They're the insurance company. My next guest has definitely a second opinion about this. Her name is Dr. Daniel Ofri, who wrote a wonderful article in the New York Times entitled Adventures in Prior Authorization. Dr. Ofri, welcome to Body Language.
Thank you.
Tell me about this article, which, yes, you can scream if you decide to, but you'll be right after me. Tell me about the Dear Doctor letter that you frequently receive from insurance companies, and how does that go?
Every doctor gets these letters. Dear Doctor, the medicine you have prescribed requires a prior authorization. Which are probably the words of doom, because you know that means lots of work. Now, the insurance companies set up these prior authorizations in order to steer doctors away from pricier medications or expensive tests, and so you have to get permission in advance of doing them.
But of course, you're dealing with a physician, a colleague, another medical professional on the other side of the phone, correct?
Not exactly, unfortunately.
Oh.
So in the example that I gave here, I have a lovely patient. I've had him for many years. He has truculent hypertension.
And it's what been, is truculent hypertension, first
It means
of all.
Hypertension that is simply difficult and nearly impossible to control. He's been my patient, I'll say, for 15 years, and for the first decade, we just kept trying this medication, that one, this combination, and medications would get some side effects or wouldn't work. So by the time we finally, you know, reached a truce with his blood pressure, he was on four medications on high doses, but we got it under control. We weren't affecting his kidneys or his potassium as we had before, and so we were cruising. I was so happy.
And this after years of trial and error and going from one drug to another. It's important for our listeners to understand how doctors work in terms of how drugs work in the human body. Not all pharmaceuticals are created equal, so you have to go through this process of trial and error. Is that correct?
Correct. And also, not everyone is created the same, and each person has different responses to medications in terms of the medication's efficacy for their illness, but also the side effects.
Now, the word efficacy means, does it work?
Does it work? So, especially with high blood pressure, I'm going to wait till this ambulance goes by.
Outside. No, actually, it's. I like the sound in the background. It makes the show sound like a Law and Order. So we have Mr. V, a patient whom you've dealt with for years, who is now on four different blood pressure medications that control his hypertension without upsetting his diabetes, kidney disease, and another form of heart disease.
Valvular heart disease.
Right. In other words, he has lots of comorbidities going on.
Right, which just illustrates how tricky it is to get effective treatment for an individual patient. People have different comorbid illnesses. They have different reactions. So it's not so easy to control someone's blood pressure or diabetes.
So you're on the phone with the insurance company, and how does the conversation go down?
It turns out that the problem is that I've prescribed too many pills. He needed to take 90 pills a month, so three tablets a day, which was a high dose.
But the insurance company had a second opinion. How many did they think he needed?
They said they only could authorize 45 pills a month.
But wait a minute. You're the doctor.
I could understand if they were concerned about me giving him a toxic dose, but that wasn't their concern at all. This was what was allowed under their plan, and I had to give a compelling reason why I needed twice the normal amount. So I said, well...
So you have to justify not only the diagnosis, but in this case, especially the treatment plan. Is
right,
that
which
correct?
Which I did. I explained. He was on four medications. He's very difficult, resistant hypertension. This is the combination that works. And they sort of paused, and it really, the idea of needing more sort of flummoxed the system, and they kept putting me through to another person, So I was four customer reps, you know, along, and I'm really getting upset. And normally I would give up, but this patient in particular has limited English. It's kind of a simple gentleman, and I can imagine he's going to go to the pharmacy. They'll say, oh, no, you can't get enough medicine. He'll just go home, and his blood pressure will shoot out of control.
So you're actually fighting for your patient, aren't you?
Oh, in this case, I certainly was, because I realized that he could never, to negotiate this on his own would have been so difficult. So I said to her, you know, he really needs this. And they have a checklist of questions. And usually it's like when they want to give you a cheaper medicine than a more expensive, they'll say, you know, would giving the cheaper medicine have any adverse effects?
But in this case, they said, has your patient ever tried 45 pills per month instead of 90?
Right. Has he ever tried this? And I remember, at first I thought she was joking, you know, has he ever tried half the dose? And then I realized she wasn't. I just lost, and I began screaming. I said, are you out of your mind? It's taken us years to get here without, you know, killing his kidneys, running his potassium off the charts, you know, ruining his libido, breaking his bank account. I mean, because costs come into this too, would I really just randomly change it for the hell of it?
And then the agent on the other side, according to the article in the New York Times, said, doctor, a simple yes or no will suffice. That is bleeping condescending and patronizing. Who's telling you how to do your job? They're not a medical professional. Doctor, is this why you got into medicine, to argue with insurance companies?
That is not why. And you know, part of what was interesting is the response to the article. There were more than 600 comments by that day, and they had to close down the comment section as people wrote in about their experiences. And I think I understand why the insurance company wants to have us have a pause before we prescribe either an expensive medication or an expensive procedure, because I'm sure there are doctors who abuse the system and, you know, order the most expensive thing without thinking at all. So I appreciate why there are these controls. But at the very least, could they put a nurse on the phone and not, you know, basically a telephone answer who has no, they can't even spell half the illnesses or medications we're talking about. So if I could explain to a nurse, here's what the situation is, they should say, okay, that makes sense, check. But I had to argue for 45 minutes with someone who knew nothing about medicine.
Why is this story so important for our listeners in terms of not only their health literacy, but perhaps to have a greater appreciation about the unseen hours you put into this on a weekly basis?
I think it's important to understand what's happening to this generation of physicians. The degree of burnout is, you know, becoming epidemic, and this kind of thing is part of it. I mean, for most doctors, we don't mind working late for our patients and working through lunch. That's the calling, and if my patient needs me, I will stay. But to work late or you know, lose my lunch or make my patients late because I'm arguing with, you know, someone with a high school education about the medicine I need for my patient, that is so supremely frustrating. It's just busy work. And it costs a lot. You know, we have to have, most of us have nurses and clerical staff to help this process because it takes hours. But often we have to do the paperwork or make the phone calls. And there's a study that estimated it takes every week, on average, 1 hour of doctor time, about 6 hours of clerical time, and almost 13 hours of nursing time, you know, per physician practice just for these prior authorizations. If you think about that, that's thousands of dollars every week that just go to this process. And you can imagine that money and time could be used for patients instead of arguing with insurance companies. Because I believe strongly that most doctors and nurses are in the profession for the right reasons. But this is the kind of thing that makes people want to quit.
I would recommend to our listeners that you buy the book by Dr. Daniel Ofri, O-F-R-I. The book is entitled What Doctors Feel, and you've heard a lot about how she feels. What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Dr. Ofri, thank you for joining us on a Backstory MD feature on body language.
Thank you so much.
You're very good at this. There might be a future for you in radio if this medicine thing doesn't work out.